Hello?
Is that working?
Hello, can everybody hear me okay?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to SBNR. I'd like to welcome everybody to the meeting this evening, and hopefully everybody can hear me clearly. Just to make sure everybody has their mobile telephones turned off or switched to silent, and the use of mobile devices for recording is not permitted. Members of the public should not speak during the meeting and may be temporarily excluded for discussion of in-committee items. Members of the public and press must refrain from using the instant messaging facility during the meeting, and anyone found to be doing so will be given a warning. Failing to adhere to the guidelines for a second time will result in being removed from the meeting. I would remind members of their obligation under the Councillors' Code of Conduct to declare any financial or significant non-financial interests which they have in any item of business before the committee today. If you have such an interest, please either declare it now or immediately before the item itself, stating the item of business it relates to. Having declared an interest, members should leave the meeting by hanging up from the call for the duration of the discussion on that item and should not take part in the vote. You will then be invited back to join the meeting once the discussion on that item has ended. The proceedings of the meeting will be audio and video recorded, except where Council is considering any exempt matters. The recording equipment is linked to the microphone system on the computer, so please ensure your microphone is switched on before speaking. If you need to leave the meeting early, please indicate via instant messenger feature so that we are aware this is an active decision and does not indicate connectivity problems. And I know we have members in the chamber this evening and online. If you wouldn't mind using instant messenger when you're proposing, seconding and commenting, it just makes it easier for me to, you know, keep a record of who's looking to come in and what order. And I would remind members that Nora Largy from Belfast Legal is joining us this evening, and you're very welcome, Nora. Thank you. So do we have any apologies this evening? I've received one from Councillor Una McGuinness.
And that's the new one we have as well.
Chair, I just want to let you know that I'll be leaving the meeting early.
No problem, Councillor Kern. Thanks very much for that. So no other apologies, thank you. Any declarations of interest?
Chair, item 14, Chief Executive Appraisal.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Byrne. And Councillor O'Murray, you're the same, yeah. Okay. And we'll move on to item 3 on the agenda, which is action sheet arising from SPR Committee, held on the 20th of January 2022, is for decision, and we'll go through it page by page. So page 1, 2, 3, 4 and 5. Any matters arising? Okay, so we can have a proposer and seconder for that. Proposed by Councillor Savage and seconded by Councillor Harrell. Thank you. Okay, so we'll move on to item 4, which is notice of motion regarding electric vehicle charging infrastructure. And we'll go over to Owen Devlin for this. Thank you, Owen.
Thanks, Chair. In response, Councillor Enright's notice of motion that was referred from the monthly meeting in December 2021 about the official designated parking bays that the council have across the whole council area, so mostly managed by AHC and a Solomber by ERT. So at the moment there are a total of 13 charging points in these. Six of those at the moment aren't working. So there's obviously it affects the capacity for charging points across the district. So Councillor Enright's motion had asked that the council sets a target for every car park to have one charging point within 1 year, and for 5% of all council managed parking bays to have charging points by the year 2022-23, and ramping up from there to meet the government's target of no new diesel or petrol cars being sold by 2030. If possible, this programme investment will mimic Dundee Council and be a long-term revenue generator for the council. So officers have considered this motion as much as we can, and could confirm that further investigation into the feasibility of the proposal would be required. Some of the factors we need to consider are the actual availability of grid connections and capacity. The approximate cost to install and connect a charge point, what we've been told, is £7,000. So to install 350 of these, which would be 5% of our parking bays, by March 2023 would cost the council approximately around about £2.5 million. There's the issue of the charger management and maintenance costs, and there's also the provision of a payment system for installed chargers. So the number of charges available for public use is obviously a limiting factor within the district at the moment. So just to let members aware, so there are a number of projects relating to electric vehicles that are currently going on. So to try and develop a more comprehensive charging network. The current existing charging network that's been there for a number of years is managed and maintained by ESB. And they're currently replacing all of their 180 existing charge points. And this replacement program should be completed by July next year. The council are also an associate partner in an Interreg project called Faster. And that will see the installation of 73 rapid charging points in area of defined need across the three partner regions. And for us, that would mean that we'd probably get around three charging points across the area on a rolling basis in the next 6 to 12 months. We're also part of the Non-Ireland Electric Vehicle Consortium. So we're working with Derry City and Shagran Take the Lead. And the aim of that consortium is to work with councils and other stakeholders to prioritise the actions needed to progress the development of a proper charge point network across Northern Ireland. So this consortium have been in discussion with the Office of Zero Emission Vehicles, DFA and NAE, regarding a Northern Ireland-wide application for funding under the On-Street Residential SCART Scheme, ORCS it's known as. So council have been requested to put forward a number of sites as potential charge point location for ORCS funding to be initially considered by NAE. And it's anticipated that the NAE-wide funding application to ORCS will be submitted next month to meet the deadlines. We also previously agreed to consider Islands Park as a potential pilot project for a solar carport as part of a notice of motion for a climate change park in Islands Park, and funding for that pilot has to be sought. And currently as well, that the ERT department are currently investing the feasibility of regarding 7 council-owned sites across the district on a pilot basis with a view to access and grant assistance directly from the Office for Zero Emission Vehicles. And it's anticipated that an application to OZEV will be submitted by the end of March. The recommendation is that if members want to pursue this motion further, that a report with further information, including more detailed costings, could be tabled at the next Sustainability and Climate Change Forum for discussion and consideration. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Owen. I'm going to let Councillor Ann write in as he tabled the motion. Go ahead, Cadogan.
Thanks, Chair. I'm glad that the office has reflected my figures as being accurate. I know that the scale of the problem is absolutely enormous, but the opportunities are enormous as well. I mean, summarising where we are at the moment, ERT have 51 car parks with almost 4,000 parking bays. We have 18 community centre car parks. We have 7 leisure centre car parks, 102 a wide variety of outdoor leisure car parks, 102 of them spread across the district, which brings us to well over 7,300 parking bays that are under our direct control. We have a further 500 limited waiting bays spread between Newry, Downpatrick, Newcastle, Kilkeel and Warren Point. I don't think we're responsible for the 420 pay and display bays in Newry. But that remains to be seen. They could be the only ones that we're not responsible for. There are a large number of car parks that are not on the lists that are submitted that were given to me as part of the information process from council. For instance, this site has several hundred car parking spaces and is not included in the overall. Now, the reason why this is important, it's because it'd be impossible for any other agency other than council to facilitate the rollout of car parks. And I do know that there's a new enforcement agency or ombudsman being set up by the UK government off charge in order to enforce targets. And the reason why this is important is because there's 1.3 million registered vehicles in Northern Ireland, of which 102,000 are registered in this area. About one third of premises are unsuitable for charging at home. That's going to leave us with 31,000 vehicles in this area within the next 10 years where people will not have the facility to charge at home. Now, clearly, people who live in country areas or people with large detached houses will be able to charge in their own homes. And they'll be able to leave every day with a full 200 or 300 or 400 miles in their tank, depending on what sort of a vehicle they've got. But this is going to leave very large numbers of people unable to switch to EVs and having to carry the costs forward, which will be increasingly. With regard to the cost, I'd just like to pick up on what the officer was saying. Those of us who attended the Levy Hotel before, just before the COVID shutdown will recall how we got the presentation from Dundee Council. And I think Dundee Council at that stage had drawn down funds amounting to something like 18.5 million, if you include their latest grant, between the UK Westminster government and a lesser amount from the Scottish government. They'd basically put themselves in a situation whereby they had many millions of pounds of assets entirely funded by the public sector and giving them assets which they controlled and which gave them a long-term revenue source. They were keeping the prices very low at the moment, just making sure they weren't losing money, but ensuring that they continue to own these vehicles, including solar ports, as the officer mentioned, with their own batteries, so they could even get the electricity for free, not have to resell electricity from their charging points, storing it in batteries that were contained within their charging points in their car parks. So we're talking about something we should have been doing this years ago. There have been grants available to install car park charging points for a number of years. We are actually in the way. I would estimate the total number of parking bays under our control are about probably 8,500. And I think our website says we've got 10 parking bays, though with a bit of research I found out we've 13 and 7 of them not working, actually. Of the ones that are working, half of them are not usable because we only paint one of the two spots in green and indicate that it's an electricity charging point. So inevitably, commuters park on the other one, reducing the amount, number of charging points by half. For instance, Strangford Village, for instance, Solway, just off Church Street. So we're not even painting the ground of the ones that we actually currently have on our premises to show that there are parking points. So what I'm saying to you is that this is a tremendous opportunity from a capital point of view in terms of giving us assets we can put in our hands. It's a tremendous opportunity from a revenue point of view if we get it together. But also it's an enormous blow to the reputation of our council that something like something in the region of one-tenth, it's not even 0.1% of our parking bays are currently facilitated. So I would suggest that a charging point in each one of our car parks within a year is a perfectly reasonable target, and that's the sort of thing we should be applying to central government for funding for. This is something we need to build up as a contract. We need to put it out to tender. We need to get this done and get it done fast. Because even if we do have one car park for every car park in our district, that's only going to be 180 car parks, charging points, and that's simply not going to meet the needs of 30 odd thousand people who can't charge at home. So, Chairperson, I know it's difficult to set targets at this stage given the level of unpreparedness of council's management in this respect. But if we don't set targets, there's nothing for them to aim for. This is not something that should cost us an arm and a leg. It's something that we should be facilitating national policy with our ownership of this, of basically 90% of all the car parks between Carrie Duff and County Monaghan. Thanks, Chairperson.
Okay, so in regards to the officer recommendation, are you happy with that this evening? Because you've tabled the motion. I know a couple of members are looking into comments.
Well, so long as there is a target, I think just having, if the target is just preparing a report, that's not actually a target. You know, we do actually need to set target for management to hit. on this subject, because it's going to be critical to our future tourism infrastructure and the future commerce of this area. If we proceed at this slow pace for the next couple of years, we simply won't be at the races in terms of people coming to visit our area and being able to visit our parks, none of which have charging points, and visit our facilities, none of which have charging points. And you know, we're leaving ourselves at a massive disadvantage in the medium term or even the short term. If I'm sure most of you aren't blind, and you can see the number of electric cars now that are routinely on our roads, and this is going to be more and more the case, particularly with given the Scottish and Irish government's targets. People visiting our area by car are going to need charging points, Chairperson. So I think if a target could be built into any report, I think I would be satisfied.
Well, yeah, I'm sure the report could include achievable targets, but I'll let the other members come in, Councillor Enright. So we have Councillor Brown, O'Mara, and then Councillor Sharvin. So Councillor Brown.
Great. Thank you very much, Chair. And, you know, as per usual, Cadogan has done an excellent job of giving the facts and the figures and the context on this. So I don't have too much to add, but to thank him for his motion and also thank Owen for his report. I do remain worried that despite all of the initiatives in the paper, we are still not doing enough to prepare our district and properly future-proof it for a green economy, or that we are not doing enough to look for funding to offset the cost of introducing more electric vehicle charging points in the district. You know, if you look at that Interreg funding in there, you know, free charging points for the district, that is, you know, really paltry, and that's the only bit of funding in there that I can see a firm number attached to. I appreciate there are other initiatives ongoing, but it doesn't fill me with confidence that we are getting out ahead of this in enough time or putting enough effort into it. Broadly agree with the way forward in terms of going and doing that further piece of research, but agree with Cadogan that that needs to be based around some solid targets and fully assess the costs associated with that. You know, just looking at the paper there, Owen, you know, there's the cost, yes, 7,000 per unit, and then you've calculated or time multiplied that by what would happen if we did 5% of our bays, which would be 350, and then we get that very big number. But is that simply taking the single cost of installation of one charging point and then timesing that by 350? Surely there are economies of scale that can be applied if we are purchasing a large number of these charging points and then rolling it out as a program of works. So that's the sort of thing we need to look at in that piece of research. We have no calculations there really on the potential income from these. You know, there's reference to the cost of installing the, you know, whatever it is, a coin machine or card machine, however people would pay for it, but there's no calculations on the potential income. I would have thought if we can work out the cost per unit, we can also go away and try and work out what the income per unit would be by benchmarking against other areas. So, you know, I find that the current figure in there is just a net cost to council, which of course is going to be very off-putting for councillors, but we haven't really done enough work there. Or sorry, it's a gross cost, and we haven't actually done enough there to work out what the net cost would be, factoring in any income that we could receive. So yeah, there's more work to be done here. Any research that we do needs to have clear targets and needs to fully look at what the income generation from this can be as well. So I will propose the officer's paper there with those conditions on it, that we also include targets and a significant look at what the income could be as well.
Okay, Councillor O'Mara.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. And thank Cadogan for the motion, which was well thought out and spoke very well on it. I suppose, Owen, thanks a million for everything that's been done so far on it. And, you know, obviously we all appreciate anything that is going to advance this, where we have to get to a certain point by 2030. And as councillors, we're going to be asked at various times, where are we in terms of getting to that. So setting of targets to that is going to be critical and crucial throughout the whole lot. Just anecdotally, I had a conversation with a man during the week who was changing his car, and he had said to me that he was thinking of getting an electric car, and I was saying, well, sure, that's good, sure. The next time you change it, you're certainly going to have to get an electric car. He says, but I decided not to, you know, I didn't know where I was going to be able to charge it or what was my options going to be. Was going to have to live on a street, so was going to have to put a charger with a lead going across the street of that. And he said, there's not even one in the town that I live in. And I was saying, do you know where your nearest charging point is? And he says, no, I don't think there's one in South Armagh. I don't know, even know if there's one in Newry or whatever. And it just sort of got me to thinking that as we're rolling this out, as we're building upon our network of electric charging points across the district, right across the district, we should be doing more in terms of PR and in terms of a map, an interactive map that people can see and people are empowered and people are thinking, right, this is what's happening, this is what the decisions that are made at SPNR or the questions mean to me locally. Because sometimes whenever we're here and a paper could come before us and it would give a load of names of streets and that, but the ordinary man and woman out on the street, if there was something on the website that they could go into, click here to find your, you're going to come in after me and tell me it does exist already, but something like that that would just be user friendly. I think sometimes when we're taking on with big strategies like this, the most important part of it is getting the message out to the public so that they can appreciate. And suppose then that man would have been saying to me instead, oh yeah, I know that my options are A, B and C, but he honestly didn't have a clue whether the council had decided to install any of these or were working collaboratively to install any of these. So I suppose that would be my input into it, just as this is going on, Owen, and look, just keep us informed with how it's going along. And I know if Cadogan's motion is to be a conduit for a future development of it, and that just keep us all appraised and keep the public appraised of all the good work that's going on. Thanks, man.
Thank you, Councillor Sharvin.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. And I think we need to acknowledge, first of all, the work that the officers have been doing. You know, we just go back to AHC in December, where Owen did bring a report detailing 18 locations where potentially EV chargers were going in. So this motion came after the work that is already underway. So don't want us to not acknowledge the work that the council officers are doing already. And they did include the likes of Killock, Ardlass, Scott Street, Mount Crescent and Downpatrick already. And then it reaches out across Newcastle, Warren Point, just as a few examples. But what I also think that the motion doesn't refer to, it's very council dependent. You know, we have planning within council. Why is it not within plan and policy that if there's a new fuel station being built, that there's provision within that that would be including e-chargers as part of that application? And then that increases the scope of how many EV chargers are actually going to be available within it. The other point that they're talking about is, you know, the revenue that comes in from these charge points. None of the public chargers in the whole of Northern Ireland and Ireland is actually chargeable at the moment. So they're free. You know, so this 2.45 million, and I do accept Councillor Brown's comment around, you know, the scales of economy. Yes, we probably would get a discount on it, but that is an outlay that the council will not recover unless legislation enables us to be able to charge for these. Or I'm not fully aware of the law around that, but given that they're free at the moment, they will be free. The other nature that we need to consider is actually the EV cars that are coming out. I'm lucky enough that my household, we do have a full electric and the range is quite good. But there is hybrids out there that is low. You know, you might get 30 miles on full electric. So it's understanding where the actual EV market will be in the future. You know, if there's longer range, there's less likely of the need to actually charge as well. But the other point that Councillor Murray touched on, there is a charge point map through the EBS website where you can go and see where your locations are. And there is 8 within Newry, which is a lot more than what's in Downpatrick, so you can certainly go and charge it. I think the essence of the motion is certainly there and we should be driving to it, but the target and the cost should not just be on council. You know, are we speaking to ANIE? They had a report out last year where they actually said they would be interested in actually financing and delivering public EV charging infrastructure. You know, is the government actually going to have a sort of high-powered vision on how we're going to be able to do this? So I think we certainly shouldn't be just putting the onus on us as a council to finance all this. I think it's very much of working in partnership with NIE, ESB, you know, the government to tackle this. But I'm not sure where the 5% target came from. Why 5%, you know, is that just a finger in the air target? So I think the essence of the motion, certainly the SDLP are supportive of, but I think it needs to be widened out of the stakeholders and those that we work with. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Councillor Tenley and then Councillor Byrne.
Thank you, Chairperson. You know, I believe that this thing is going to creep up on people in such a fashion that they're going to be so unprepared for it. The next few years is going to fly by, and before you know it, fossil fuel vehicles will be no more. And the thought just came into my head there, but we were talking about cost and who should bear the brunt of the cost for installation and that. And it may be a chance here for, yet again, for our council to take the lead on this in the northern context. And my suggestion for discussion would be, and I'm happy enough to propose it if you're allowed, and if my fellow members think there's merit in it, is to engage or write to the DVA to see is would there be any merit in even putting a surcharge of 5% on annual road tax to pay for these things for the next period of years, so that money is ring fenced to pay for the infrastructure that every council area is going to have to put in. I think Cadogan had mentioned a figure there of something like 100,000 vehicles in our council area, and presently, if we were to install 350 EV charging points, well, that's 25 quid per vehicle. So, I mean, like something like a surcharge on car tax, which everybody pays. Car tax is obviously related to postcodes and so on and so forth. So it would be very, very easy to have a certain amount ring-fenced for each and every council district. So if there's merit in that, sure, I am happy to propose that we direct officers to go off and do a scoping exercise on that. Thank you.
So your proposal is to go to DVA to ask them to surcharge road tax to pay for EV charging points?
That's it, yep.
Okay, have you got a seconder for that proposal?
I have no idea, but we'll soon find out.
Do we have a seconder for that proposal?
Yeah, I'm happy to second, Chair.
Okay, I'll take in Councillor Brown and then maybe go back over to Owen if need be then. Sorry, Councillor Byrne.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. And proposals like that sort of throwing in sort of, you know, confuse me in the sense that we have a cost of living crisis and we're talking about surcharging the ordinary person on the road tax to cover the infrastructure for electric vehicles. I mean, I find that maddening. You know, if I take it from this angle, I want an electric vehicle. I'm doing work to my house and we're putting in the connection for electric vehicle. I went and looked at electric vehicles through all the garages. And the infrastructure obviously isn't in place for me to use it from a rural area going to Downpatrick and back and forth, and that's why we're having this argument. But then to say that, you know, it should be up to us to increase our road tax to pay for that, it shouldn't. We should be maximising the schemes that's already out there. And a couple of councillors have talked about the faster scheme, and yes, it isn't the silver bullet here, because you're talking about, you know, a small number of applications in the Newry, Moray and Down Council area of 3 applications, but it is 6.4 million. And that's a scheme, that Interreg scheme, that we worked in collaboration with Scotland and the Republic of Ireland to deliver 70 plus charging points. We need to see more of that. So we need to be lobbying, you know, governments and working in collaboration in order to get maximised funding to get the infrastructure in here. Or we talked about opening up competition so that we could get more charge points. And we all know the problem with that. But then to simply say it, that we should just increase the bills of the normal household and that'll guarantee us an income for the infrastructure, I find in the current climate very frustrating. There is a lot of good work done on the FASTA programme. There is a lot of good work done on the list of the feasibilities that we got through ERT and the council on the different schemes that they're involved in terms of the NIEV consortium that we're part of. See the grant applications with the Office of Zero Emission Vehicles and the feasibility study that Owen was talking about, the on-street residential care or charge scheme programme. See the application that got in at the end of March 2022. Can we have, as Councillor Murray had said, to be appraised of those applications? We all know what we have put forward, but to see what is actually applied for. We know the funds is out there, and that'll sort of keep stock of where we are at the minute. Because, as Councillor Sharvin said, there is a lot of good work going on currently. But when we get to this point where we're raising motions like this, we need to know what is actually out there, where the holes are. And I've noticed going through the map that Barra had talked about and Garrett had said, I've seen the map. I looked at that because I was doing my research. I joined a Twitter group of EV car owners and had a load of questions. And they're all in built-up areas. I mean, the rural areas are absolutely empty in terms of charge points. So I could find 20 sites with multiple charge points on them, but they're all in areas like Castlewell or Downpatrick or Newry or Kilkeel. So we do need to make sure that there's a spread across this district, and the applications that we are making through the FASTA Fund and all these other funds that were in the NIEV Consortium, we make sure that we have a good spread across the district, that we all have access to EV charge points. Otherwise, we'd be banging the drum of rural proofing again if it's all in the urban areas. But, you know, I don't think we should send officers away. Listen, have a discussion, maybe to contact the DVA, but to send officers away to look at charging the average household a levy to put in the infrastructure. If I went out and told people in St. Gullion that, I think I'd get lynched.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Enright's motion in the chamber. Do you want to let Owen come back in again first, or are you summing up? Or do you want Owen to come in first, or are you happy enough? Okay, go on ahead.
Thanks, Chairperson. I don't think that these two motions are mutually exclusive. I do think that we're more likely to get funds from established funding schemes than going back to the department and asking for a new one. I think if we were to copy what Dundee did, we'd be doing very well, pulling funds down centrally. And if money funds become available from Stormont in the same way it became available from the Scottish Parliament, all the better. Additionally, I'd just like to highlight the fact that the numbers I'm talking about are not extreme. If you take the 18 units that we are currently in the process of getting and add them to the 13 that we've already got, that makes about 40, okay? If we take our figure of 8,000 parking bays, 1% of 8,000 parking bays is 80 charging points. Now, I would say to you, that would be 1%, okay? The difficulty I would have there is, of course, as was pointed out earlier, they'd all end up in urban areas. The attraction about having at least one charging point in every one of our car parks, i.e. 180, I know it would increase our total target to 2.2 rather than 1%, but it would make sure that every single village and every single settlement in our council area, with no exceptions, and we have, if you look at the list of car parks that we have, there's virtually no village or no settlement where we don't have a car park. It would mean that the rural areas would not be discriminated against, and we could put our hands on our heart, and we could be saying that no matter where you live in this district, we would have a charging point in the car park in your village. So I would say to you is that 1%, i.e. 80 charging points, is not a big advance over the 40 we're currently planning. And that were we to go for one charging point in every car park, That would be 180, and that would be 140 more than we're currently planning. But if you think about it, it's a reasonable target to expect that no matter where you are in Newry Morne and Down, from the borders of County Monaghan up to County Duff, that there will be somewhere where if you couldn't charge at home, you'd be able to go, that you and it wouldn't be a trek to the nearest town. So I think the targets I'm suggesting, 1% or, and I'm prepared to take your lead on this, chairperson, either 1% or a charging point in every car park is a reasonable low-level figure, something that we can turn around to the department, we can turn around to the funders, and we can say, look, you know, 1% of the car parking bays in our area would be 80 units. This is the minimum we want. But we would prefer if you would fund us for 180 units, which would ensure that every single village in our area, virtually without exception, would have at least one charging point. And taking that to the department, taking that to Westminster, and asking the existing funding streams to do that is a realistic option. And this isn't something we're going to do ourselves. It's something we will put out to tender and that we will get economies of scale on. So can I suggest to you, chairperson, that the figures I'm suggesting, either 80 or 180, are the correct figures for the short term? Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Enright. Well, I think we shouldn't maybe limit ourselves or set a target at the minute. We should wait and see what the further information and costings come back. Just thinking from a fiscal point of view, just to see, you know, how we can go ahead. But I'm going to go back over to Owen if there was any questions among all those comments. And in relation to Jarlath's proposal, is that something the council can actually do, or is it just a matter of writing to DVA? So back over to you, Owen.
Thank you, Chair. I don't know if there's any questions that I could be able to answer in all of that, but the issue of writing, I don't know that DVA would, you know, treat different council areas differently from the point of view of that. I have no idea. I suppose the other thing we have to remember, I think probably a lot of the perception in different schemes, they're probably, you know, I imagine that the impression is that in rural areas, people may be more likely to have their own space to charge a car, because suppose ultimately, as electric cars go more popular, having spaces in car parks for people isn't going to be the answer. And the other thing we have to remember as well, and I think one of the members did refer to it, we're obviously moving to a space, and electric cars are very, very expensive. There's no second-hand market because who knows what the battery's like. That's a major problem coming down the line as well, because electric cars at the moment are hugely expensive compared to petrol or diesel cars. So you know, I take all those views. Possibly Dorina might know better about the DVA issue, but I don't know that they would be able to, that we within their varies to apply a different charge to a particular council area.
No, a bit like yourself, Owen. I really wouldn't know whether or not it's something that they could do. I don't know any of the government agencies at the minute that ring fence income received from a certain area deployed back into a certain area. It does sound administratively burdensome, but if councillors wanted us to write to the DVA to ask if it's possible, we can of course do that.
Okay, thank you, Doreen. Now, I would note we didn't have total consent for that proposal, so because Pete, you know, has heard concerns around it. So we may need to take your proposal to vote, Councillor Tinley.
Well, Una, listen, I'm happy enough to withdraw the proposal. I don't want to be throwing oil in the water here. The only reason I raised what I raised was to try and steer this thing away from the potential for ratepayers to pick up the tab here. Any of these infrastructural capital programmes will always be built by some form of taxation. So it just, you know, it just will be coming in under a certain banner, but at the end of the day, it's all taxation. But no, I'm happy enough to allow the thing to evolve naturally over the coming years, and I wouldn't want to don't proceed with the vote. There's no point in confusing the thing. I'm happy enough to withdraw.
Okay, if you're content with that, Jarlath, that's great. Yeah. And I think, you know, the recommendation is there that further information is going to be included. So we'd hope to see maybe a more detailed report. I know it's going back to Sustainability Climate Forum. I think it should also be, you know, tiered towards into Strategic Financial Working Group, given that there will be implication of cost as well. So, but we can take that, you know, when the report is ready to go to that, and then maybe steer it forward into the finance group as well. So if we've no other questions coming forward, then we're happy to go ahead with the recommendations this evening. Yeah. Okay. Pardon?
Will there be a target?
I thought we agreed with that it'll be in the detail of the report that we wouldn't set a target because we don't want to limit ourselves. Are you content with that?
Okay, minimum 1% target is something we should set. It's not beyond the bounds of reason.
Put your microphone on.
Oh, sorry. When we're currently aiming for 40, 1% would be 80. That's a reasonable target to set for management. And remembering, we're not proposing paying for this ourselves. We're proposing going to central government and asking them to pay for it.
Well, we're going down this whole road again, Councillor Enright, of setting management targets. So I think you should probably not limit yourself and go back and let the report come to sustainability, and then we'll see what the officers can come up with, and then we'll take it from there. Are you happy enough with that? Yeah, because we're going to get something more detailed and tangible and workable, I think. Happy enough, yeah? Okay. So it was proposed by Councillor Brown. I need a seconder, please. Councillor O'Mara, a second, and thank you very much. Okay. Good debate there. Thank you, everybody. So item 5 on the agenda is another notice of motion from Councillor Brown regarding live streaming, and that's going over to Doreena.
Thank you, Chair. So members, Councillor Brown put a notice of motion in front of Council in January, which with Councillor Brown's permission I will read for you. This Council laments the fact that it is one of just two local authorities across Northern Ireland not to offer live streams or video recordings of its full Council meetings. It notes the detrimental impact this has on transparency and public engagement with Council business. It will immediately begin the process of ensuring either live streams or pre-recorded videos of full Council meetings and statutory committees are uploaded to the Council website, whichever is simpler to implement and offers best value for ratepayers. So the report in front of you tonight, members, aims to pick up on a number of the points contained within that motion. You'll see at 2.2 that when we went into the COVID lockdown period, we were forced, I suppose, to move our Council meetings onto a platform which we use, Microsoft Teams. Since March 2020, when we went online, we have actually offered the press and public live access to those meetings. And you'll see in the report, this is clear on our Council website. What you'll also see then in terms of considering the need or the appetite of the public to attend, since March 2020, we have had 13 requests from members of the public to actually access that link for Council meetings and a further 3 requests for committee meetings. And that's almost a 2-year period now that we're talking about. We have liaised with other councils as well, and again, the position across the piece really is that there has been very limited public access to live streams, and Councillor Brown is correct that there are a number of councils doing this in a number of different ways. You'll see at 2.3 we have sort of pointed out to you that we could put our, at the minute we upload our audio link of tonight's meeting and others, we could publish a video link. There are risks that come with that, which we've outlined for you later in the report around GDPR, etc. There would also be a time cost, an officer time cost implication of doing that. A further option as well would be to live stream on a channel such as a YouTube channel. And again, that's probably more costly as well. There definitely are advantages to live streaming of the meetings. With regard to the transparency point, I suppose I would point out to members that all of our committee and our council meetings have action sheets published. They have minutes published and they have an audio recording published. These are all in the public domain, and that does satisfy the requirements of the Local Government Act in respect of transparency. So it's just to assure members, if you are meeting currently, your legislative responsibilities around the transparency of your meetings. But I suppose coming back to then 3.1, if you do want us to go further, members, again, we have a number of options in front of you. We can continue with the current method in front of us. And even when we do return, I suppose, to a full, we're in what we call a hybrid, I suppose, position at the minute, where some of us are physically in the chamber and some of us are coming in through a live stream. We can continue with this. We have option two then, which is the next step, I suppose, of uploading a video recording. Again, there are risks associated around this, most notably GDPR, which we would have to explore further. And there would be an additional officer cost on that. And then option three is taking it that one step further again by going on to a live video streaming channel. And again, further costs and further risks. But we're happy to take a steer from yourselves, members, as to which of those options you'd like us to explore further, if indeed at all. So happy to conclude for now.
Thank you, Dorina. We have a number of members looking to come in, so we'll start with Councillor Walker.
Chair, thank you very much. Firstly, I want to thank the officers for this paper that they brought, but my concern still is there's nothing within this paper in relation to costings. Now, I'm not knocking this, so I'm not saying we shouldn't live stream. What I'm saying is, before I make a decision or my party makes a decision, I want to see the costs for this, because the last motion there, when we talked about charging points, there was a figure in there of 2.5 million. So there was, now that wouldn't cost that for this, you know, but we need to see the figures so we do what this is going to cost this council and ultimately the ratepayer. You know, I don't mind the live stream, but, you know, we need to see the figures here and the costs. Until that there, our party would not be supporting it in that. Now, when the figures come back, we'll take a decision then.
So you don't have a preferred option then?
Well, at the moment, I'd be happy enough to go with option two. That includes looking at the figures and coming back with the costs.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Walker. Councillor Brown, you're proposing and a comment.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. As the original proposer, I was hoping to come in there first, as Cadogan did, but no worries. Billy's contribution was very valid.
Councillor Brown, sorry.
No worries. But his contribution is valid and valuable, so don't mind. I think, you know, at the end of the day, we do need those costings. I have done a bit of research about this, so I'll go through what I have, and maybe that would help. But certainly we do need to do a little bit more work and bring this back to councillors. So from my research, as it says in the motion, this council is one of only two councils that doesn't provide some sort of video recording or live streaming of its meetings, and the other one is Causeway Coast and Glens. So, you know, this motion really asks, why should we be so different from the vast majority of other councils? I know I've brought similar motions in relation to these issues pre-COVID, and they were ultimately voted down. But now, when council and committee meetings are mostly online, perhaps for the foreseeable future, I think there really is no excuse not to follow the lead of other areas and what they are doing. I don't accept that any of the concerns raised in the officer's report are reasons not to proceed with the substance of the motion. In fact, I think a number of the reasons are actually strengthen the motion, because it will clearly, from what the report says, actually provide stronger evidence for any disputes or challenges, I believe, and I think that can actually be a benefit to council. as for councillors, you know, making hand gestures or faces that could see them in breach of the code, I think we all as councillors should be mature enough to accept responsibility for anything like that and shouldn't be worried about that. To be honest, it's a bit disappointing. Whilst I thank Dorina for her motion, it is a bit disappointing that, you know, this is 2 months after I tabled this motion originally, and there's still no clear calculation of costs or indication of costs. There seems to be an assumption in the report that live streaming would be the most expensive option. From my research, I don't see any evidence to support that. In preparation for this motion being discussed, I actually wrote to all councils in Northern Ireland and received replies back from 6 of them. I think it would have been useful if officers had in those 2 months carried out a similar benchmarking exercise prior to this motion being discussed. But I will share some of my findings in summary now, and I can also send these through to council officers after the meeting. So in Antrim and Newtownabbey, meetings are live streamed. This costs them £800 for equipment, so that's a one-time cost. Then £840 annually for a Vimeo license, and £800 per meeting for an AV company to provide additional equipment and link that the recording up with Zoom. That's obviously the main recurring cost, but that avoids any additional officer time, and that costs £800 per meeting, as I've said, so about £10k a year. In Ards and North Down, they live broadcast their council and committee meetings via their Zoom account, and there is no additional, though there was no additional capital cost for this, and they didn't specify that there are or not any additional staff costs. In ABC Council, they live stream all council and committee meetings to YouTube, and they remain accessible there afterwards. The total cost for equipment to facilitate that was £7,000, but this was bought to facilitate hybrid meetings, so presumably our council already has a lot of that capital equipment in place. ABC have said that it takes up to 24 hours of time per month for two officers, so 24 hours each per month, and that those officers were given time off in lieu for those hours. In Belfast, they live stream all meetings. They upload the video for full council and the audio for committees. And this remains on the council website for 2 years. I don't have costs for Belfast.
Councillor Brown, if I don't mean to interrupt you, but do you have permission to put the costs of other councils in the open session?
Yeah, this was all provided to me publicly through email, and I told them why I was bringing it. So okay. I told them it was part of a motion and would be using it to evidence that motion.
As you are, go on ahead.
No problem. In Fermanagh Noma, they live stream all meetings and upload them online afterwards. They chose to fit out both of their council chambers, and the equipment for this, as well as 1 year's technical support, was £47,500. Although much of this was, again, to provide hybrid meetings in the first place, so we would obviously have a lot of that in place already. In terms of officer time, they have two members of the IT team sitting in on each meeting and don't have the associated costs for that, but you can times it by the number of meetings to get a rough number of hours. In Lisburn and Castlereagh, they already had much of the equipment already pre-COVID to enable live streaming, so they only had to buy Zoom licenses. They live stream only, and they do not video record. They do audio record all meetings. They say they have not incurred any additional officer time from doing this, which I think is notable. And finally, in Mid Ulster, all meetings are live streamed to their YouTube page, and these stay on YouTube for 3 months. They said the capital costs for equipment were minimal, and they operate with one camera only, and that's directed at the chair, so other councillors are heard and not seen. So in summary, I think it's clear from what other areas are doing that there are a huge range of options out there, which I think officers need to go back and look at in more detail. It's my view you can't put a price on transparency. The current system of audio recording only, whilst an improvement on no recordings at all, is inadequate and makes finding information after meetings far more difficult than it could or should be, especially in the post-COVID era. I would also add that someone coming in and sitting in council meetings is totally different to watching them back in their own time. So I don't think that the figures from the last 2 years of 13 people should be used to undermine what I believe is a very strong public interest in watching or listening to council meetings in their own time. Therefore, I would propose we proceed with options 2 and 3, as I don't believe they are written to be mutually exclusive. And that we should have councillors present full costings as soon as possible. And also that when doing that, they take into consideration the options and costings of models in other council areas. And I think it's also important that that report looks at not just what we're doing now in terms of hybrid meetings and whether we live stream and or record those, but also that we look at potentially continuing either live streaming or video recording if and when we return to in-person meetings as well, and what the cost of that might be. So yeah, that's my proposal there, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Brown. That was a very, very detailed, comprehensive comment there. Just to clarify, as Chair, you did ask me to defer this motion from December, which is why it's only coming to be heard today. So just to remind you of that, there wasn't a delay as such.
No, I know that, but 2 months have passed, which is why I'm...
But the 2 months have passed because you deferred it from December to January. And then
still, in my view, ample time to go and look at costs, I believe.
But I think this is the first committee where it could have been heard.
Yes, but it was still tabled quite some time ago, so that work could have been going on in that time.
I just want to put on record, you asked for it to be deferred. And I just want to confirm as well, see, in terms of the options that you're requesting, you want to go through all other councils and what they do and bring that back as part of the paper?
I think so. I mean, I've already done it, so I don't see why council officers can't do it as well.
Okay, right. Okay, that's fine. Just wanted to clarify that. Councillor O'Meara?
Thanks, Chair. And try and be a bit more brief. I suppose just Dorina and Dorina's point that there was 13 views over 2 years. I suppose you could probably tie in that we were through COVID at the time and people had other priorities. I can say that. You could possibly say, build it and they will come. Who knows? I certainly think it would be a positive thing to try and change the culture of how people perceive council and their councillors, although not all of our council meetings are inspirational stuff and stuff that people will be that keen to listen to. Not all, some are. Lots of what we do is inspirational. But listen, I think it's great at the minute that people can get in through Microsoft Teams, but I don't perceive that. I don't see that lasting forever. So, yeah, I agree with the other councillors. If we can get a costing for what it would cost to both, either record, film them and then play them back when it's over, or if it was cheaper to live stream it using a YouTube channel or something like it, I don't see why not. I totally get that Belfast City Council is able to do it, ABC Council is able to do it. Why are we not able to do it? So if we get the costings and they come all back, well, then we can... Maybe by the next SPR meeting or the time after that, we can make a decision on it. Happy with that, yeah.
Are you happy to second it then?
Happy to second, yeah. Patrick, yeah.
Okay, I would point out, while you think you're inspirational, self-praise is no recommendation bar. Councillor Byrne?
Thanks, Chair. I have a few points to make on this, but I suppose this has come up, and Councillor Brown said it in 2019 that he brought it up and other people went against it and so forth, and we've had it brought in front of this council a couple of times. Councillor Walker stated at the start that we never had any figures for it, and we didn't know the real appetite for it. We talked back in 2019, what is the real appetite out there on the ground, and then we can see, you know, the appetite for the live watching, and I'll focus on watching it in real time. Isn't very high with 13 people. And I understand that Councillor Brown makes a point around watching it afterwards, and I'll touch on that in a bit. There's a few points I want to make. This is always dressed up as being anti-transparent, closed-down council, and there's a sort of there's a spin put on this that is completely dishonest and should not be allowed to stand. This council is in no way less transparent or more closed than any other council across the North. And as Patrick had stated, you know, with the figures, and he went and he wrote to all councils, I'd done the same research and got all the figures and costings of all the councils. And as I stated before, with statistics or any facts that you get, you can present them in a way that you want to make your argument. And sometimes they're presented very, very unfairly. So Patrick makes 2 points here. He makes the point about people having the ability to watch council meetings as they're happening. And he talks about the ability of people to watch video streams or videos of council meetings after they've happened. They're two completely separate points. So let's take the first one. People watching council meetings as they happen. Tick. Newry, Mourne and Down, District Council, people can watch council meetings as they happen. We can dance on the head of a pin, whether it constitutes live streaming, because we're not using a certain designated channel for it. It's not just by simply clicking a link on the website. It's cumbersome that they have to send their email to Democratic Services by 1 o'clock. If there are issues that people are presenting to the council and why they're not watching them, as the meetings happen, we can look at that. But when we say we're one of two and we should lament the council because we're one of two that doesn't provide the live stream as they're happening, that is simply not true. We have a list of councils, and he said it himself, that do not that have live streams the same as us, but they click on a link, and they do not upload their videos afterwards. He talked about Midden East Antrim, Lisburn and Castlereagh, Antrim and Newton Abbey. They don't upload them afterwards, and it states a disclaimer about the recording. They upload the audio. So, yes, you can watch them live, as you can watch our meetings live, but there is no ability on those councils. Actually, from the councils that I counted, there are 7 of the councils, there's no ability to watch them afterwards. I think it is fantastic, the ones that do watch them afterwards. There is use of YouTube, there is use of some of their own portals, some of their own channels, and some of them have different levels of success. Others I found very, very difficult to watch because of the focus of the camera. But he talked about costs. He talked about firing out, you know, Antrim and Newton Abbey, £8 for the live stream. Yes, ABC Council, or Fermanagh and Omagh, sorry, I'll hit on that big figure, £47,500 for the infrastructure. And then he hit the nail on the head. There's certain councils using the Zoom accounts to have the live streaming at no extra cost. Newry, Mourne and Down Council's doing that. We're doing it. So we should talk about continuing. It was option one. Continue with that. Let people join the meetings and watch them at no extra cost. So as I said, if there was any issue about them having to send their email to Democratic Services, and that is a barrier which has never been said to me, let's fix that. So if we can look at a link, but I think we should continue with that hybrid model going forward. So this is not about, you know, lack of transparency. We're on par with other councils, and we are meeting our legal obligations. I would like all council meetings streamed or video recorded. I would like people to watch what's going on in the chamber. And I said this back in 2019, the more people that will watch what is going on, the more falsehoods they would actually see, because after meetings, anything could be put online. I think on option two, you know, the SDLP's position, let's go out and look at costings of how we can translate what we are already offering the public to watch as the meetings are happening. And I there's probably no members of the public on this meeting tonight. And see if we can upload that on our website or onto a YouTube channel. If those costings come back, then as Patrick said earlier on, the appetite for watching afterwards, he believes, is a lot higher than watching live meetings. We can test that. But right now, we don't have the figures for the appetite for watching live meetings to be quite, to make the argument. Minister Hargey also had a consultation out on the hybrid model, and I know we had answered it as a council. I had answered it individually, and parties had answered as well about how we continue the hybrid model going forward. So I think there might be a way of maybe making the results of that consultation coming back, that we have this hybrid model going forward of trying to draw down some level of funding to help with recordings. But also, when I come across some of the council's websites, I found there was a great tool on some of the websites which is very good for transparency, and it was the councillors' attendances, you know, at meetings. I thought it was staggering. It's live attendance stats at meetings. I thought that what a brilliant way of telling the people on the ground that you're elected to go in and speak for them, that you're doing your job, and that is absolutely the ultimate level of transparency that we as elected reps who speak for the people should be here on the behalf. So, you know, the proposer of the motion, if you really want to improve transparency, I would ask you to improve your attendance at this committee. You nearly missed 40% of these committee meetings this year. So, you know, the very last point, very, very disingenuous and dishonest, and must be called out, that an assertion at the start that this motion was kicked down the road for officers or other councillors or whatever, and it was unfair that it wasn't heard earlier, it was deferred because you were not in attendance in December. One of those nearly 40% meetings that you were in attendance. So we can talk about transparency and we can present it in all different ways. Let's be honest, the council are doing the live streams, albeit in a different way, by sending your email. Let's look at how we can upload that.
Thank you, Councillor Byrne. We'll have Councillor Taylor and then Councillor Charvin.
Thanks, Chair. I'll keep it brief. Chair, listen, in principle, I have no issue with live streaming, and certainly anything that we can do to make council meetings, council structures, and decisions that are made on behalf of our ratepayers, anything that we can do to make that more transparent, we should certainly explore that. There may be issues regarding the cost associated with live streaming, and that's one of the issues that we need to look at and explore over the coming weeks and months before a final decision is made on this. But certainly in principle, happy to explore live streaming. Say I have no opposition to it. I think it's a good idea, and it's certainly utilised by other councils, but we just need to make sure that it is cost effective. Given the figures that have been obviously produced in terms of the number of members of the public that have attended meetings over the last maybe year or so, it may not be as popular as maybe we think it would be, but listen, it's something we certainly should explore. And if it is cost effective and it does obviously increase transparency, we'll look towards doing that. So hopefully any report coming forward can come forward as quickly as possible, and it can allow us to make a informed decision on it going forward. Thank you.
Thank you, David. And I'll bring in Councillor Charvin.
Yeah, Chair, and I'm not sure if streaming or video, and it's going to make an episode of Gogglebox. I don't think we're that much of an entertainment. But it's also about value for money as well. There's nearly 183,000 people that live in Newry, Mourne and Down District Council, and if 13 of them have shown an interest, is that really value for money? Whenever we've actually seen big crowds of people attend the chamber when we were here, there was times where we actually didn't have enough seats and we limited how many people could be in, but that's when the topics were quite hot and people wanted to be there. And in this day and age, most items are in committee, so why would they want to tune in and hear about stuff that's not going to be actually spoken about? But the main point I wanted to make is about the costings, and I think on the research with other councils, there's a lot of gaps there that I can see. We've talked about officer time. IT equipment is obviously a certain element, but then there's your cloud and your physical virtual machines that you need to be able to store the recordings. You know, how much storage is going to be needed to actually retain this? How long are we retaining it for? And what is the policy around that? That then will add extra costs of storage. Additionally to that, you know, the licenses, the hosting license, the license of the equipment. Further to that is, you know, FOIs will come in. You know, if people are able to record this, there's more questions. And that's great. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. But that's more officer time. So, yes, there is elements that have been considered here, but there is other elements in the background from an IT perspective that will need to be considered within our IT strategy as well, of how we are able to support this request. Do we have the people who will be in place to provide that support? And from an FOI perspective, is there enough people within that department that would be able to respond to an increase in demand on that? So they're all costs that we do need to associate to it. But I think as Councillor Byrne has really done his research on this and has spoken, the SDLP would be option two.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Charvin, so just to clarify then, are we looking at all the options across the board? Right, okay. So it's a proposed and seconded for option two and three. But continuing with one and to look at options of what all other councils are doing. Okay, I don't think there was any questions in there for Tarina, so we'll go back to Patrick to sum up.
Yeah, that's grand, Chair. Look, you know, thank everyone broadly for most of the comments. I think there's an appetite out there to explore this further. I'm happy enough that we do that and try and bring in all of the data possible. I would take exception to Councillor Byrne's comments. However, 40%. I'm not sure where he pulled that from. There's been occasional meetings where I've maybe had to leave early, but to my knowledge, I've maybe missed two. So I don't think that makes up 40%. But as Pete said at the start, you can always find figures to present your argument convincingly. Of course, Councillor Byrne never fails to find ways to be very nasty and attack me whilst also broadly agreeing with me, but maybe he's still bitter that he's no longer SGLG leader or running for the Assembly in May. But hey, maybe that's just jealousy, but look, we'll leave it there.
I think you're veering off. You're summing up with your motion. Do you want to continue? We're going to have an attack on Councillor Byrne and yourself, have an argument in the chamber between the two of you, or if you could just continue with summing up on the motion, that would be great, and we can move on to the next item.
No, that's grand. I'm happy with the way forward. We go and look at all possible options. Sure.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for all your contributions. So we'll move on to item agenda 6, assertion of McMinns Lane Dundrum. And we're going over to Fergal O'Connor.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, the background to this is the Council's duty under the Access to Countryside Order in 1983 to assert, protect and keep open any public right-of-way within the district. There is a process that the land management team within council go through in respect of the body of alleged rights of way that exist within the district. They go through a prioritisation scheme and score the alleged rights of way according to that list of criteria which is in council policy. There's then investigation, evidence gathering, and so on. Some of which can be contentious, and at the end of that, each of the rights of way are assessed against the relevant criteria, and the decision is taken on whether or not to assert the right of way, which is the official term for the establishment of the public right of way. This application, this matter which comes before the committee this evening, concerns the alleged public right-of-way that existed at McMinns Lane between Castle Hill and the junction with Castle View in Dundrum. It has gone through the investigation stage to determine the status of the path, and the decision which has been arrived at by the land management team is that the path can be asserted as a public right-of-way, and the recommendation before committee this evening is that the committee approve the assertion statement of the land management officer, which is appended to the report, and that the path be asserted, this path known as McMinns Lane, be asserted as a public right-of-way for use as a public footpath. Happy to deal with any issues, Chair, that arise.
Thank you, Fergal. We have a proposal from Councillor Harrell and a seconder from Councillor Sharvin. Did you want to make any comments, Councillor Harrell?
Thank you, Chair. Just very briefly, just to say that I'm happy to propose this path is widely used both by locals and by visitors maybe that are going to the likes of Dundrum Castle, but it's also a route, I suppose a safe route for many using the Sacred Heart Primary School in Dundrum as well. So vitally important that it's kept, you know, maintained and looked after. So happy to propose, Chair.
Thank you. Councillor Sharvin, do you want to make any comments?
Yeah, Chair, Councillor Gallagher isn't able to be here, but he passed on similar remarks as Councillor Howes, so happy to say.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Lewis, you have a question?
Thank you, Chair, for letting me in, because I'm not a member of this group, but it was just simply yes to welcome this and to ask that what sort of action would the Council take to public right-of-ways that have become blocked or overgrown, as there are a few within Sleeve Croob that have become blocked and overgrown, and it'd be something that I'm wanting to look into.
Sorry, Councillor, it's not in relation to the agenda, so I would advise you to go and speak to Fergal outside the meeting, if that's okay. We do have a lot of stuff to get through this evening, and I don't presume that he would have that information.
Yeah, that's okay. I'm happy to talk after him. No problem at all. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. Okay, if we could move on to item number 7, which is allocation of the special responsibility allowances for decision, and it's over to Jarena.
Thank you, Chair. So, members, you'll be aware that any member in receipt of a Special Responsibility Alliance can only be in receipt of one. We have had a change in year due to a change of party leader within the SDLP, and as such, Councillor McAteer, who is already in receipt of a Special Responsibility Alliance, cannot take a second one. You will see that when this situation has previously arose in the last two years, that the council have made a decision to allocate that additional SRA evenly amongst all the other positions which attract an SRA payment. So this is the recommendation in front of you tonight, members, please.
Okay, thank you, Tarina. We have a proposal from Councillor O'Mara and seconded by Councillor Byrne. Did you want to make any comment, Barra?
Comment, sorry.
I didn't want to make
You do want to make a comment.
Yeah, I didn't want to make a comment. Just a brief comment. Look, I suppose, do you see in the future, going forward, if all parties took note of this, I know our party has been guilty of this in the past as well, it would be more beneficial to a party for somebody to step down and somebody else in the party to get the allowance. It's sort of a bit messy whenever we're going into this here and an SRA is being divvied up between everyone else. So probably just going forward might be best. So happy to propose, yeah.
Thank you. Councillor Byrne, sorry, I thought that was an S. That's my side.
No, you're all right, Chair. No, just a comment. I suppose just on the first of all, on what Barra had just stated there, we generally as a group come towards each position, whether it's chair of a committee or group leader, as the best person for the job. So this will inevitably always happen. And apologies for stepping down and causing this problem with the paper in front of us. I'm going to go back to what we done previously. We discussed this at length when it first happened, and we talked about how I had proposed, if anyone remembers, go back to 2017, I think it was, I had proposed that we look at the deputy chairs. Because more times than not, deputy chairs step in and chair meetings and get no thanks at all for the extra workload. And I can count, you know, off the top of my head, at least four times this year where that has already happened. But that started a big discussion on it, and all groups went away and discussed it at group leaders, and we came back and discussed it at SPNR. And we came up with that the chair of planning was way and above the workload for all the other chairs of committees, where the committee meetings is 2 or 3 hours once a month, and the chair planning is all day on site meetings and the whole lot and briefing panel. And we came up with the option that any unused SRAs in 2017-2018 year and 2018-2019 year, that 50% would go to the chair planning and the 50% would be split across all other SRAs. And we stuck to that over the last 4 or 5 years, and that has continued into this term. On the 14th of November in 2019, it came back in front of us again for exactly the same reason why it's in front of us today, because we had a change in position of group leader. And it was a person that was Councillor Clark who was a group leader, and he was also on the planning committee. So identical situations. And the only reason why we had to deviate away from our other policy of 50% into the chair of planning and 50% into the other SRAs is because there was two. There was the group leader of the Alliance Independent group. So you cannot give 50% to the chair because they would have had two SRAs, and that's forbidden. So that was an anomaly on what we've been doing for the last number of years. So I was disappointed to see that we've, you know, stuck to that when we've won SRA and we had the same paper, a different paper coming up in front of us. And I would propose that we stick to what was agreed with all the council groups, that we recognise the chair of planning as we've done over the last 5 years, and that 50% goes to the chair of planning and the other 50 is split among the other SRAs. We don't have two SRAs. We don't have a problem like we did have in November 2018. And we've done this time and time again with every single party. So that would be my proposal.
I'm going to bring Drina in, Pete.
Yeah, sorry. Just my recollection, Pete, is that it was only in the first year of council that it went to, sorry, the first and second year probably of the last term that it went 50% to the chair of planning, as it was recognised that because the planning powers were newly devolved, that it was actually a much bigger role. I think from the third year in, it has then been split evenly, but I would have to go back and look at that. Certainly in the last 2 years, any that have come up, and that's the years referenced in the paper, the agreement has been to split them evenly. But we can advise you when we ceased giving the additional to the chair of planning, but the rationale at the time was because planning was so new and that the chair of the planning committee was taking on such great responsibilities, if you like, in that early learning period. But we can hunt that out for you.
Chair, for just a brief comment on that.
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. I'll be very brief. Yeah, Doreen, and go back to the 2018-19 is the year you're talking about. 2017-18 is definitely, because I've gone back through my notes. And my discussion in November 2019 in my notes is that we've two SRAs. And that's why that wasn't entertained. That's why I'd raised the deputy chairs again and continued. All parties said we'd stick with the chair of planning. But we had two SRAs, we couldn't do that. So the proposal still sits. I find the chair of planning, with 50% of the SRA, was something that we backed over the last number of years, and I certainly propose it again. But, you know, if you want to go away and look at it, bring it to group leaders and have that information. If Barra and Billy and David want to have that information back at group leaders, no problem.
Councillor Byrne.
Sorry?
It's been to group leaders.
No, I know, but without that information, Chair. It hasn't been without that 50% chair information. So if Doreena wants to go back and check when that had changed and group leaders want to look at it again, I've no problem. But I just I thought it was fair to propose it this evening.
Chair, if you don't mind.
Yes, Councillor.
We group leaders met, and it's not a decision-making body, Pete, as you know. But we had this discussion now, not the exact same discussion. We had a very similar discussion at group leaders last week. I think David's on the call. He'll be able to confirm this. And we arrived at what we arrived at here, and it was brought, and your own party were well represented at that meeting as well, just for information.
Okay, so with the recommendation in front of us, we have a proposer, but we don't have a seconder as yet, unless it's up. Okay, and then Councillor Brown's made a counter-proposal, so Councillor Byrne, sorry, I'm going to put my glasses on again here. So Councillor Byrne, you're making a counter-proposal, and Councillor Savage, are you seconding Councillor Byrne's proposal?
Yes, Chair, I am, because I believe no matter what way you carve this up, and I think, you know, it's not about the current Chair of Planning, it's for all future Chairs of Planning. We all know that there's huge additional responsibilities for the Chair of Planning. And I think that when there are SRAs available, we should be carving it up that way to be reflective of the huge workload and responsibility that comes the Chair of Planning's way. It is a tough job. I don't think the SRA reflects that. And I think that, you know, we were happy to allow it when other people were in that position, because we recognised that. I don't think that there's any councillor here would disagree that it's a big role to take on, and a challenging role outside of that of chair or deputy chair of council. So, you know, I'm happy to second Councillor Byrne's proposal, but I'm also happy to second his sentiments that we maybe have a look at it and come back again. Because, you know, there is an element here where you do have a group leader scenario, as we had there, where maybe it was very difficult for the group leader involved from our perspective on this occasion to look at anything other than an agreement, because he's probably put in a difficult position. But, you know, certainly I believe that the chair of planning takes on a very difficult and very important role, and we maybe should be thinking about that when these opportunities arise. That's all I'm going to say, Chair.
Okay. So is it a proposal, or are we going to just revert back to party leaders for a more in-depth discussion again?
Chair, it sits as a proposal, but as I say, I have no problem if you just want to take it back with that discussion, because Doreena said she wants to look back at the reasons why it was changed from that 50%, and if, you know, group leaders want to look at that information and bring it we'll discuss it full council, like, no problem. I don't want people making a decision without that information if they don't feel comfortable, but if they feel comfortable going ahead, the proposal stands.
Right, okay. Councillor Walker?
Chair, thank you very much. My yes was second, Barra, but I would be happy enough for come back. You know, it happened to our party with Gareth Craig at the time, so it did, same thing. And we'd always been going down that lane of it, been divvied out amongst the other ones that's getting it, and that. Now, Pete made a suggestion there, and I would totally agree with this, so I would, and I would support this, that you have vice chairs of the committees, and they do step in at times when other chairs can't make it. And the next time this happens, you know, or maybe this time when we have a chat, again in relation to it, we could divvy that money up amongst our chairs, 3 or 4 or 5 chairs. So we should, because, you know, they're in a position, so they're getting off. And I know all the old councils, chairs and vice chairs, all got. So they did. So I would be happy enough for that, but I would still be happy for it to come back to group leaders.
Well, I think that's a different proposal again then, because the first one was that 50% went to the chair of planning, but then you're sort of saying we could maybe look at, if it was to be divvied out, it goes into the vice chairs?
Yes, now I understand where they're saying the chair of planning. The chair of planning is already getting responsibility allowance. You know, you could say that everyone in the planning committee deserves it because they're all given their time and that. You know, the only difference the chair's doing is chairing the meeting. So it is. Now, I preferred, if I was going to go for the chair of planning, 50%, or divvy it up amongst the deputies and the committees, I would go for the vice chairs. That would be my...
Yeah, okay. I'm going to bring Doreena in, and then I'll let Councillor Taylor and Councillor Sharvin in, okay?
So just to make it clear to the committee, we have a ring-fenced amount of money that comes with a special responsibility allowance. We also can only give it to 21 councillors, and that's why the deputy chairs of committees actually, in addition to what we have given it at the minute, would not allow us to do that. So it's probably something that we would need to look at how we arrive at that makeup of 21, maybe in the next term of council. Councillors, because if you did wanted to go to chairs and deputy chairs, you couldn't actually then give it to your full planning committee as well, as well as group leaders, etc., etc. So that's happy for us to have that debate maybe at another day, but at the minute we can't actually do that and still satisfy the legislative requirements around it or the departmental requirements around it. So we can look at that further. So happy to do that, but it's probably for the next term of council.
Just say that clarifies that position then, so it does.
Okay, thank you, Billy. Councillor Taylor?
Yep, sure. Listen, I suppose it was just to say what, you know, Doreena has said as well. There was, you know, there's a limit on the numbers of councillors that can actually receive an SRA, so that, you know, would count Billy's proposal out. I also just want to assure Councillor Savage that nobody was put in a difficult position at the group leaders meeting regarding this. It was a fairly open and, you know, transparent discussion on it, so nobody was put in a difficult position. Michael, I just want to assure you of that. I'm happy for it to go back to group leaders to have another discussion on it to try and get some clear, you know, outline on it. But maybe just to ensure that the parties obviously have a discussion beforehand as well, so that they all know whenever we are having a discussion with group leaders exactly where the, maybe their own position is on it. So, you know, that whenever we do come back to discuss with the committee, that we can, you know, be very clear as to where everybody is on it. So happy for it to go back. No problem with that.
Thank you, David. Councillor
Sharvin? Yeah, Chair, I was going to raise the exact point. Doreena actually raised around the numbers, so I'm okay. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So are we in agreement that we're going to go back and look at it again? And I suppose, as Councillor Taylor said, if we can, as parties, get our ducks in a row about what we actually want to see happening with the SRAs, you know, then we can maybe come to a better conclusion when it's tabled again. Is that okay? Is everybody in agreement with that then? Yeah? Okay, thanks very much for that discussion. Okay, so item 8 on the agenda is schedule of meetings, May 2022 to June 2023. It's back over to Doreena for this.
Yeah, members, it's just to table for you and I suppose draw your attention to a number of clashes and anomalies that we have. So we have a mock AGM tabled for Thursday the 26th of May with our AGM on Monday the 1st of June as is required by statute. The planning committee is scheduled for the 4th of May. We've talked to the group party leaders because we are aware that there is an assembly election the next day. So we're currently trying to find a suitable alternative date for that to keep the planning committee on schedule. The ERT committee is going to have to be slightly rescheduled due to the way Easter falls in April. And I suppose just flagging to you, but I'm sure you already know, that meetings in May 23 may also be impacted by local government elections, but we'll bring that back to you when we know more detail. So tonight, members, we're really asking for you to approve the dates of the mock AGM, Thursday 26th of May, the AGM, Monday the 1st, and that move in ERT committee meeting. And we will revert then when we have an alternate date for the planning committee in May 22.
Okay, thank you. Jarena, we have a proposal from Councillor O'Mara and seconded by Councillor Harrell. Do you want to make any comments, Farah, or no? Happy to propose. Councillor Harrell? Okay, we don't have any other questions around that then. Okay, thank you. Items 9 to 15 are deemed to be exempt under paragraph 3 of part 1 of Schedule 6 of the Local Government Act 2014. Information relating to the financial or business affairs of any particular person, including the council holding that information, and the public may be, by resolution, be excluded during this item of business. So could I have a proposer and a seconder to go into closed session, please? Proposed by Councillor Harrell and seconded by Councillor Sharvin. Thank you. Okay, so whilst in committee, the following items were agreed. Item 9, lease the units at Sainfield Community Centre on the proposal of Councillor Brown, seconded by Councillor Sharvin. It was agreed that elected members approved the following recommendations. A lease of the industrial unit known as Unit B at Sainfield Community Centre, Belfast Road, Sainfield, for a term of 15 years is offered to the party named at paragraph 1.6 of the report at the rent stated therein. A lease of the industrial unit known as Unit C at Sainfield Community Centre, Belfast Road, Sainfield, for a term of 15 years is offered to the party named at paragraph 1.9 of this report at the rent stated therein. Item 10 was leasing of council land at Lismore Cross MacLean on the proposal of Councillor O'Mara and seconded by Councillor Byrne. It was agreed that elected members approved the grant of a 25-year lease to the successful applicant within this process indicated in paragraph 2.1, subject to market valuation and legal formalities and the recovery from the club of the recoverable costs under the Sports and Community Leasing Policy 2016. Item 11, surplus assets update on the proposal of Councillor Murrah and seconded by Councillor Harrell. It was agreed that elected members note the content of the report and attached Appendix A, surplus asset overview, and approve to move Grove Garden Recreation Killala to the open market. Item 12 to 14 were for noting. Item 12 was update on the acquisition of lands at Camla Lake on the proposal of Councillor Murphy and seconded by Councillor Howell. It was agreed that elected members note the contents of the report. Item 13, Strategic Financial Working Group Action Sheet, 18th of January 2022 and the 3rd of February 2022. On the proposal of Councillor Murphy and seconded by Councillor Howell, it was agreed to note the Strategic Financial Working Group Action Sheet. Item 14, Chief Executive Appraisal, on the proposal of Councillor Murphy, seconded by Councillor Howell, it was agreed to note that the 2020 to 2021 and 2021 to 2022 performance appraisals of the Chief Executive had been completed and members of the Chief Executive Appraisal Group were unanimous in their assessment of performance. Item 15, presentation on museum structures. On the proposal of Councillor Brown, seconded by Councillor Hanlon, it was agreed to note the presentation on the museum structures. There was a proposal agreed that the Council will carry out a full and detailed strategic review of museum services and the investment in them across the district. And point two, this review will include meaningful consultation with key community stakeholders, including Friends of the Down Museum and any other groups deemed relevant. Okay, thank you. So if we move on to item 16 and 17 are for noting. So if we could just have a proposer and seconder for the noting items, please. A proposal from Councillor Howell and seconded by Councillor Sharvin. And if there's no comments on that, we can wrap up SPNR committee for this evening. Thank you all for your debate and comments tonight, and have a good rest of the evening and safe home. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair.